Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
That sense of purpose needs to be shared by the leadership team, by the executive team. Everybody needs to buy into this. Otherwise, you can forget about it. And once that has happened, it needs to be shared with all stakeholders, predominantly the employees, but also everybody else.
Hey, it's David. And you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, so glad you can join us today. I have a tremendous guest. I'm so excited to introduce you. I don't know that we've had a topic more aligned than with this show than today's topic, and you'll see why in just a moment. Our guest today is joining us from Frankfurt, Germany. His name is Ralf Specht. He's the author of Building Corporate Soul. He developed the Soul System, which is trademarked, and Framework Power Cultures and Success for Any Business. After 2 decades with McCann Erickson in various executive roles, he was a founding partner of Spark 44, an innovative, industry-first joint venture with Jaguar Land Rover. Now, I'm still trying to figure out how I can end up with a Jaguar Land Rover of some kind after the show, but you know, Ralf and I might have to talk about that later. Under his leadership as CEO, Spark 44 grew to 1,200 people doing business in 18 countries, and his driving vision is to make soulless companies a thing of the past. So as I said, the name of his book is Building Corporate Soul, Powering Culture and Success with the Soul System. I am so excited to be able to introduce you. Ralf, thank you for being a guest today on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
David, it's really my pleasure. It's probably going to be a soulmate conversation tonight.
It might be just a little soulful. Let's do this. Well, okay. I want to talk about building corporate soul, and there is so you have so many powerful, I'm not going to call them arguments, but positions and principles in the book, and we're going to dive into all that. But before we do, I'd like you to take us back. I mean, you have done some amazing things as a leader, business leader in your career, but I'd like you to take us back to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader.
My earliest memory of myself as a leader was probably when I trained a volleyball team at the high school when I was, 16, 17, 18, all those years ago, and bringing people together and align them on a shared mission and an idea of where we could get ourselves towards was probably the first memory of a leadership experience that I have had.
Very nice. That alignment and getting everybody going in the same direction. And I'll tell you, that is work you have done and then some over the course of your career. And so much of building corporate soul is about that alignment, and it comes across in so many different ways. So we're going to get into the details of that, but I want to start at the level of definition. When we talk about corporate soul, you know, our first book that I jointly wrote with my wife and business partner, Karen Hurt, was Winning Well, A Manager's Guide to Getting Results Without Losing Your Soul. Obviously the name of the podcast, Without Losing Your Soul. So we get asked, what do we mean by soul? So I have to ask you, when we're talking about corporate soul, what are we talking about?
Well, every company has got a culture. You can't have a company without a culture, right? But only few have got soul. And when I talk about soul, what I mean is the integrity of strategy and actions, attitude and actions. Basically walking the talk and being clear who you are, why am I here, why are we here, what are we supposed to be doing, and how are we going about it, right? I mean, that's the key. If you answer these questions, if you're able to answer these questions, you've come a long way, because many leaders can't.
So we're talking about that integrity, that alignment of action with our strategy, with our values, that all of those things align and get us there together. And you break that out into a number of different aspects. I'm curious, as you know, I know joining us, we were talking before the show, you're telling your partner about the show and the name and so forth. I'm curious, as you think about leaders or businesses losing their soul, what does that look like from your perspective?
Well, in the book, I've looked at both startup companies and companies that have been around for decades. And two of them, I think, come to mind. One is Hilton Hotels, and the other one is Lego. And pretty much like 20 years ago, early 2000s, I think both had lost their way, their direction completely. And it took that deep hit, actually, and a period of making losses and not being accepted by their potential customers or and employees to make them realize we got to do something differently. And Lego was interesting, because they figured out that part of what got them losing their way is that in their design team, in their research and development team, there were too many people that were actually not addicted to Lego. Mm-hmm. And so they figured out that one of the killer questions in hiring was figuring out the relationship that people had, applicants had, with the Lego brand from childhood and all the way through. And that was obviously only one small element. There were many others, but reinvigorating the soul of the company, I think, was a really critical thing. And Hilton, pretty much the same. I think Hilton is a class example of a company that have understood that having the great mantras at the reception of headquarters is a great thing, but if it doesn't connect with the people, the frontline people, the hotel reception, the cleaning lady, the waiter, and everybody in the service industry or in the service departments of the hotel, it's actually worth nothing. It's just a fig leaf and a nice crafted set of words that sound great, look great, but nobody will ever experience them.
And one of the points that you're drawing out there that I want to highlight, and I think is important as we talk about this work, is that as a leader, if you're looking at your organization and feeling, as Ralph said, that it might have lost its way, and you use that as a term, like for losing your soul, like we've lost our way. Maybe we're seeing that in the business outcomes. Maybe we're seeing that in the employee relations. There's many ways it can manifest, that it is possible to recover. It's possible to come back by using the system that you're talking about here. And so there's hope. So if you're listening and going, oh gosh, I'm not sure about the alignment and how well we're doing here, there is hope and it is recoverable.
Yeah. And I mean, the system has basically got three components, right? So it starts with the shared purpose. And for me, it's critical to call it the shared purpose and not just purpose. Purpose has been like the flavor of the day for whatever the last 10, 15 years. Everybody's talking about purpose, and that's a good thing, but actually talking about it is just not enough. So shared purpose means finding out the clarity about why you're here, why the company is here, and shared is critical in two ways. One, that purpose, that sense of purpose needs to be shared by the leadership team, by the executive team. Everybody needs to buy into this. Otherwise, can forget about it. And once that has happened, it needs to be shared with all stakeholders, predominantly the employees, but also everybody else outside the company. And well, once you get that, you got the nucleus, right? And then you got to work on the strategic elements, and I call them the shared understanding. As you see, the word shared, it runs throughout the system. So shared understanding is about the vision, the mission, the values, and something that I believe very often gets overlooked, which is spirit. And vision, I think, is clear. Mission is clear. Values are clear. But what do I mean by spirit? So
yes, let's unpack spirit.
Yeah, for me, especially looking into the example that you just mentioned, if a company has lost its way, there's hope. So if the company has lost its way and leadership have understood that that has happened, they got to figure out the purpose and the vision and the mission and the values. What I suggest they also do is think about the spirit. And I mean by spirit, the intended culture of the place. So if the purpose is right on the money, the vision is clear, the mission is clear, the values are clear, what do we want the company to feel like, right? Basically, is your litmus test whether this is the theory, the theoretical culture versus the real culture once things are at play. And once these two strategic elements, the purpose and understanding, are clear, we get into the shared behaviors. And shared behaviors basically are the litmus test of whether it happens or not, right? I had a call from someone who runs a company a few weeks back, and he read the book and he was like, this is great and I love it. And I want to tell you, we're a company with soul. I'm so proud of what we've achieved. And I listened to him and we had a conversation about it. And I said to him, you know what? I think it's great that you recognize this and that you are so proud about it. I'm very happy for you. But I can't tell you whether you got a company with soul. And I'm always a bit suspicious if leaders tell me, but I'm put that aside. To me, the people that can make that judgment are the employees. They can tell you whether a company, a place has got soul or not. And they look at it across all the elements of employee experience. What is happening inside the company? How do they experience it? And you look at Glassdoor or any other side of that nature, and you get a good sense of what the spirit in that company is and whether it's the intended spirit or not. And so you have a good picture of culture.
I love that the spirit of the organization and the intended culture and the experienced culture, realizing that it's not you as a leader, you're not the arbiter of whether or not the culture is there. It's the experience of all of the team members, all of the employees throughout the organization. That's ultimately the defining factor of how they're experiencing the spirit or the culture.
Yeah, and as a leader, you got one responsibility. You got to create an environment where that intended culture, the spirit, can happen. You got a responsibility actually to help people and support people. That's why I'm talking in the book about supporting soul drivers, recognizing potential soul leaders and soul makers. And these are not necessarily the number one or first line or second line reports that you have. That might be anyone inside the company. And if you're able to figure out who they are, you've done a critical job. And it means that for HR teams in companies, they got to be very curious. They got to be really walking around the place with open eyes and open ears and figure out who are the people that are critical for the culture of the company and how can we help them develop their skills and make sure that they keep on pushing for that culture inside the firm. Because as you said from the subtitle, it's about powering culture and success. The two are inextricably linked.
Absolutely. And
the companies, I think that's got it perfectly right and managed it. And again, it's a company where you would probably argue they had a hard time at one point, not necessarily commercially, but probably culturally, is Microsoft. And when you look at Microsoft's value proposition when it comes to their customer base, that they're basically saying it's to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And they've translated that into an employee value proposition that says, be the one who empowers millions. Mm. And I mean, it's close to goosebumps, right? It's a very strong statement. And if you take it seriously, then I think it's the foundation for a great culture to emerge.
That is so powerful. You're right. That does give you goosebumps when you really take it seriously. As you're talking, I'm thinking about a group. About 4 or 5 days ago, I was with a group of CEOs, and we were talking about human-centered leadership and courageous cultures in our parlance and these aspects. And one of the topics of conversation that some of the leaders brought up was interesting, and I know you've got a perspective on this from your Soul Index, but it was the, is it just the right thing to do, or is it the business case, or is it an and? And there was some difference of opinion listening to the group talk. I certainly have my perspective on that, but you've got some math to back up your perspective. So I'd love to have you share with us a little bit about the Soul Index and why you're so committed to this topic.
Well, first of all, I'm committed to the topic and basically because of my experience as a leader. I had the privilege to be a co-founder of a startup, which then grew significantly across the globe. And our team of founders at the time was pretty sure or pretty certain that we wanted to create a culture, create the environment for a culture that was human-centric and performance-driven. And when I stepped down as CEO, there were lots of messages that I received from my colleagues, and they were very moving because they did not stop at this normal kind of farewell, have a great time, it was great, and hope to see you in your next job and all of these things. They went much deeper, and they all looked into the culture that we had created. And many of those, and a few are mentioned in the book, looked at what I, as an individual, but I also as a leader of the company with the other leaders, have been able to achieve for them. And they basically said, we would have never thought we could have accomplished the things that you've trusted us that we would be able to, and we did. Mm. And so that inspired the book. And when I wrote the book, as I was going through surveys and statistics and studies and cases and interviews, at the end, I was thinking, well, so if I take all these studies and put them next to each other and blend them into a statistic that puts the weight on employee satisfaction, employee engagement, and CEO approval, and marry that with business success and brand success, then let's see what happens. And this is how the Soul Index came about. And when I got the list, I asked a friend at a bank whether he could do me a portfolio analysis, and we could look at this from a perspective of performance. And the results are mind-blowing because the index, Soul Index 21, basically delivered close to 200 percentage points return. NASDAQ did 180 over the same 5 years, and Dow Jones and S&P 500 were 73, I think, and 84. So there is a lot of success in that space. And then also last year, Soul Index did 34, and NASDAQ did 27, and S&P did 27 too. So it kind of works. And you see when you look at the Soul Index, there's a domination of tech companies. There's 60% tech inside the SOLD index. People often ask me, so why do you think that is? And my answer is tech companies have very early on understood that human capital is their only capital. And that has led them to create cultures. And not everybody's perfect in that space, but many are very good on comparison to make that happen.
And I wonder as well if you don't have, well, I guess it would be interesting to, gosh, I'm going so many different directions. So first, I want to emphasize what you just said. Yes, the performance numbers were significant, that I have not seen analysis of that sort before until I came across your SOLD index. So I thought that was a pretty powerful demonstration of the business outcomes, that it's a both and here. We're talking about business outcomes and the human-centered approach to leadership and business growth and development and culture. And then as you're talking, I'm wondering about some of the, as you're sharing that 60% of that index, they are tech companies. And I'm wondering how much of that is newness, although many of them are not new anymore. Some of them have been around for decades and decades.
Absolutely. And you look at those tech companies, and obviously they are younger than some companies in the SOLD index, which have quite a history, like American Express or Deloitte, which are 19th century companies. But then you get to the number one, Adobe, and Salesforce number two, and Microsoft number three. And they were founded between 1975 and 1999. So in comparison, they're young, but they're not startups anymore. They're huge companies.
Absolutely.
What's interesting with them is Adobe, over that period of the last 20 years, this millennium, they've only got two CEOs, right? Microsoft, same thing. Salesforce, pretty much still the founder with Benioff. So you look at that, and you look at the average tenure of SOLD Index CEOs. So the average CEO tenure in S&P 500 companies is roughly 7 years on average, right? Here it's 9 years, and if Jeff Bezos wouldn't have resigned as CEO in 21, obviously it would have been even higher, because he's been there from the get-go. So that's number one. Number two, you look at those companies, and they are very clear about who they are. I mean, like that Microsoft example of the external value proposition and the internal value proposition, they just know it. And I really like two examples from the SOLD index in terms of two companies, which I think are really a class act in terms of their clarity, and then also the actions. And one is LinkedIn, the other one is Southwest Airlines. And being from Germany, I've never flown Southwest Airlines. I've heard a lot about Southwest Airlines. And when they appeared in the SOLD index, I thought I need to dig a bit deeper. I need to understand a bit more. And I just came across a post of a Southwest Airlines employee the other day, like a few weeks back, on LinkedIn, and he talked about the culture. And the reason he talked about the culture was a sad event happened because someone in his family passed away. And 2 days later, he received a letter from the CEO, personalized letter. And when I looked then through the comments on that post, there were many who said, yeah, I was in a similar situation, and it's amazing how that happens. And when you look at Southwest Airline in terms of their purpose to connect people to what's important in their lives through friendly, reliable, and low-cost air travel, and you look at this, connect people to what's important in their lives, you understand you can't do that with your customers if you don't do that with your employees. Very straightforward. And their vision is to be the world's most loved, most efficient, and most profitable airline. And the mission is to dedication to the highest quality of customer service delivered with a sense of warmth, friendliness, individual pride, and company spirit. I got to check that out when I'm in the U.S. next time.
Well, Ralph, I can tell you that and they are not a sponsor of the show. So without any entanglement there, they are my preferred airline domestically. I fly Southwest exclusively if they're going where I need to go. and everything that you just described, I can vouch, is absolutely true. It is, and it is how you're treated. It is the atmosphere from gate agent to ticketing to on the plane, all of it.
Yeah, and LinkedIn is another great example, and their purpose is so straightforward and clear. And it's to facilitate professional networking. Okay, straightforward. The vision is create economic opportunity for every member of the global workforce. So everybody at LinkedIn knows kind of what they have to do, right? Create economic opportunity for everyone, pretty much. The mission is to connect the world's professionals to make them more productive and successful. Okay, so you want to make sure that there's economic opportunity for everyone, and you want to make, find a way to help people be more productive. And if you're a LinkedIn user, you see that every day when you're using the platform. And their values, I think, are really great, because there are 7 values, and they're not that superficial fluff that you often read when you read value statements. Value number 1 is members first. So it's customer centricity. Relationships matter, both internal and external. Then there are two statements about the attitude that people want to see, which is be open and be honest and constructive. But then they're really raising the bar. They're saying demand excellence and take intelligent risks and act like an owner. Mm-hmm. And the leadership principles are guided by the thought of the ability to inspire others and achieve shared results. So when I read all of that, in your mind, you get a clear picture what life at LinkedIn looks like. And if you're able to get it like LinkedIn does, or like Southwest does, you got the foundation to actually make sure that all your principles in terms of how you behave as a company, be it with your employees, be it with candidates that want to come, be it with people who leave, be it with suppliers, be it with the communities you're operating in, be it with your customers and your clients. If you have that level of clarity, you can start building the principles of how you want to work with everyone. And if you get all of these things in sync, corporate soul emerges.
Powerhouse. As you're talking, and the one thing I would recognize is that, well, first, several of the companies that you have mentioned, we have done work with. So you've seen some of the culture from the inside, and as well as some of the challenges. And just because we have these ideal values and the mission, and we're very clear on that, doesn't mean we don't have the normal tensions and frictions that human beings encounter working with one another. And as we're growing and priorities start to conflict, and we have to work through all of those things. So it's not that it's a panacea. It's that we've created a culture in which we're able to do those things.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is not a book about a dream or anything, right? This is a book about how to make things better every day. Because if you think you got corporate soul today, well, Monday might be another day. So, it doesn't stop, right? Everybody talks about marathons and all these. This is more than a marathon. It just doesn't, it never ends if you take it seriously. And you got to make sure you get the right checks in place so that you can identify whether you're still on the right track, or whether you need some early warning signs to, well, we got to watch out. There's something happening here, like silos in companies, big companies. The larger the companies become, the more silos you usually have, and the worse it is for culture.
Absolutely. So it's the daily choices that we're making and the systems that we're building and within which we work, and they are continually taking us one direction or the other. So in the soul system, you discuss many facets of organizational life, and you have a great model put together. I mean, you talk about everything from compensation to recruiting to partnerships, followers, development, and of course, leadership. So I want to start there as we dive into some of the more practical we've been keeping at the top level. So focusing in on leadership, when you think of what it means to lead with soul, what are some of the the core concepts, the core practical things that any leader listening to the show right now should be thinking about in their own leadership?
I think the first thing is you start thinking about your own leadership. Sounds banal, but very often everybody's so busy, scheduled from whatever early in the morning to late in the evening and sometimes the weekend, that you don't take the time to reflect on what you're actually doing. And other than the business challenges that you need to face and client issues and all of these. So think about them. And I think there's a number of questions I think that you should ask yourself. And one is your leadership style just David's leadership style or Ralph's leadership style, or is it the leadership style of that company? So like on LinkedIn, the ability to inspire others and achieve shared results is the guiding principle in terms of their leadership principle. So do you have something like this? And is it something that you've just got in your mind, or is it something that everybody who's a leader in the company knows about? Again, it's about the shared knowledge of things. Then to me, it's been the most rewarding element of my leadership across many years, which is, are you actually helping others to become leaders, good leaders? And it makes me so proud whenever I see or hear stories of people that work with me and how they have developed and where they've gone. And this is just great. And I think there's also one element that my dear friend Kevin Allen, in his book, The Missing Piece of the Cutlery, put up, and he described his first leadership role. And when he got that promotion, his manager said to him, "You know what, Kevin, there's one thing that you should never forget. As of this day, your dinner conversation." Because as a leader, and that's not just the CEO, that's everybody who's leading teams inside the company, needs to really be very mindful of what he does and what he says, because everything will be watched and everything will be listened to, and you've got to make sure that it stands the test of your own, well, character and attitude, and everything that you're saying is important to you.
Mm. As a leader, remember you are going to be dinner conversation.
Yeah, you are.
You are. It's so true. I hadn't heard it put that particular way, but I had a senior vice president or senior executive president, sorry, at one point early in my career, who took me to a cafe for lunch. And when I got up to wash my hands, he said, "I want you to take the long way around this restaurant to the washroom. And with the intent, I want you to just eavesdrop on the conversation." This is a business restaurant, so it's filled with business diners. "And I want you to eavesdrop as you walk around." And when I got back, he said, "Okay, so what did you hear?" And I said, "From what I heard, probably 80% of those conversations was somebody talking about their boss or complaining about a coworker." He said, "And there you go. You know, it was creating that awareness and some of that, and some of the way that you said that is you're going to be the topic of conversation. And sometimes it might be favorable or unfavorable, but I like the distinction that you put in there. Does what you're doing stand the test of your own values, purpose? You know, can you look yourself in the eye at the end of the day and say, I am in alignment and I am doing what matters most and taking care of people and taking care of the mission and the work in the way that matters?
Absolutely. And I mean, I remember one situation when I mean, business isn't always straightforward and it isn't always great. So sometimes you have situations where you have to do things that are actually not what you ideally would like to do. And at one point in my career, we had a situation where we needed to close an office and had to let people go. And we did it in the most positive way you can do this. And that included severance payments and various other things. And I went there to make sure I was part of these conversations, because I thought I can't just be there to say, hey, we won this and we were doing great. But you also have to convey the bad news. And in that, there was one situation where everybody in the company understood, but not the leader of that office. Mm. And so while we had agreed clear standards for everyone, that person asked for significantly more. And I had a tough conversation with that person in order to make sure that there was an understanding that we can't tell everybody this is kind of what it is, this is the structure, and it's whatever X weekly pays and so on and so forth. And then the leader of the office gets like double or triple or whatever it was. I don't remember the proportion or the ratio. But you've got to be clear about those elements. And I mean, one thing that we did inside Spark 44 to help us have a good temperature test of what was happening, what was going on, because if you've got 18 offices, I mean, nobody can be everywhere at the same time, and not everybody can be there for 365 days a year. So we had initially a quarterly and then a system for every 4 months, three times a year, evaluation process. And there's many of those, obviously. And I've seen many, and I think many of our listeners will have seen many that are actually a bit of a burden and a waste of time. This one wasn't. And the reason it wasn't was that the evaluation structure was centered around the values of the company. So basically, every 3 months or later on 4 months, every manager had to talk to his people, and it was always a 360 conversation about their performance against those values, and to define what to stop doing and what to continue doing or to start doing. And there was a little financial bonus attached to it, but it wasn't like huge money. It was just more recognition. And that did wonders. And it, again, when you look at behaviors in terms of the shared behaviors of a company, these things help you if you start reading the data to make the right decisions in terms of what needs to happen in which office or in which department, and act upon it. But people will look at you once you explain what the results are, what the findings are, if you act upon them. And if you don't, they won't forget. So again, that's not the dinner conversation. That's like the coffee break conversation. You got to be sure to try to walk your talk.
You're building culture either way, and it's which yeah. builder or which culture you're building. And you know, such a practical suggestion that you just had there is, and so often overlooked, is how are our, and you get into this in some of the systems, but how are your recognition, compensation, development, how is all of it tied to the values and the culture that you're trying to build? So, you know, such a powerful thing on your, on the performance management system you talked about, of how are we behaviorally working towards these values, or are we, what do we need to do more of, what do we need to do less of? And so forth. And it's just a powerful, practical way that we can start thinking about immediately. If you're wondering about how to, okay, what do I do with some of these things? I want to go to another practical element here. We're talking with Ralph Specht. He's the author of Building Corporate Soul, Powering Culture and Success with the Soul System. And Ralph, you talk about in all of these different elements, compensation and hiring, recruitment, and leadership, and all, one of them that you talk about, I think, is one of the most important decisions that any leader ever makes, and that is who they promote, who they put into positions of responsibility for people. And so you talk about soul drivers, and you mentioned the soul driver earlier in the episode, and about how human resources need to be staying curious and looking. I am curious from your perspective, what is it that makes it so difficult, seems, for so many organizations to promote the right individuals who are in alignment with their culture? And who should we be promoting? And then, I mean, ultimately, I'm going to ask you, do you have any suggestions on how we can make sure we're promoting the right people? But so, series of questions there.
Yeah, so promotions are a really challenging thing. On the one hand, they are a perfect opportunity to make someone happy inside the organization. On the other hand, they're a perfect opportunity to make 10 people unhappy inside the organization. All the other people who also thought they would get the promotion. Or sometimes nobody gets the promotion and somebody's hired from the outside. And so yeah, everybody's unhappy. So finding the right candidate is a big challenge. And everybody who's ever done it knows there's a real challenge. And I think some of the rules or principles that you can apply when you hire new people to any position, you can apply here too. And very often the process doesn't seem so structured as in good hiring processes. So number one, in a hiring process, you obviously got quite a few stakeholders, right? You got the leader of the team or department, you got the HR people, and you probably got influential colleagues, depending on how it's structured. And everybody's got their own thoughts about what that position would bring. And the job description is one thing, but very often the job description is just written somewhere and then it's out there. My suggestion is to really spend a bit of time on the job description with all the stakeholders that later on make the decision. And also at that stage, define the criteria by which you decide. And that is really, really critical, because afterwards, once you make the decision, A, it's easier to look at the various candidates and their strengths and weaknesses against those criteria. But most importantly is when that person when the decision on that person has been taken, this puts you into a position of strength as a leader, because you can argue why it's that person in a much, much better way. When we're talking about promotions, sole drivers are an interesting feat, because on the one hand, if you think about that, somebody's overlooked in such a process, and everybody inside the firm would think, well, but it should have been her, and she should have gotten the job. And you can very easily get into a spiral of, culture isn't of any value here because she's been doing, and there's no recognition, and so on and so forth. So you've got to make sure that once you promote somebody else, that person that didn't get the promotion knows why and understands why. And sometimes it's hard. These conversations are never easy, but the worst thing is not having that conversation. And so creating buy-in from everybody else and then managing the announcement in a way that you link the qualification, the hard skills of that person to the cultural elements that everybody will recognize, so people can have a sense of, I get it, I would have loved to get the job, or I think she should have gotten the job, but now he is getting the job, and I understand where the decision has been taken from. And that is a bit more than just an email announcement of saying, hey, Mary got the job. So again, I mean, I think we started the conversation by when you asked the question, well, what do I recommend for leaders? Well, and my first answer was, well, if you start thinking about it, you're already on a good track. Same here, think about it and think about what it would mean to you as an individual. Put yourself in those shoes and create a bit of empathy to make sure you set the person that you promote up for success for their new role, because ultimately that's what you want.
So many practical, that segment right there is worth, I would say, playing probably once every quarter as you are thinking about who you're promoting and how you're building the criteria-based job descriptions, how you're evaluating candidates for those roles internally or externally, either way, and how you're communicating the changes that are made. And going back to, I just love what you said at the beginning there, that promotions are not about making one person happy. If we use them that way, we're setting ourselves up for disaster, and we're not doing it in a soulful way that is culturally aligned. It's about what's best for the team, for the organization, and for that individual. It should be good for that individual as well, but they are one aspect of the total equation. All right. Ralph, tell us where we can. I've got another question for you, but I want to have you tell us, where can we connect with you, find the book, find out more about what you're doing?
Well, there's a dedicated website, which is buildingcorporatesoul.com. So it's pretty straightforward, actually. And you can also do a soul check. It's what I call this thing, which is probably takes 5 minutes and asks a number of questions. And you can basically check out the score of your corporate culture and see where you're trending. And that's helpful, I think, for people who say, well, I think it's good, but I'm not so sure. And obviously, it's a temperature test again, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do it in 5 minutes. But I'm also offering on that site the opportunity for people to fill in a box about, is there anybody that they would recommend as a sole driver or any company that they think is a real sole company, which I'm happy to feature in my newsletter that comes every 2 weeks. And then obviously you can follow me on Twitter and you can follow me on LinkedIn. And it's always straightforward because Ralf Specht as a name works easily because there aren't too many with that name on those platforms. So it's good.
Fantastic. So buildingcorporatesoul.com.
Yes.
All right. Head over there. Get your assessments for yourself. And I just love that. Nominate your business or a company that has that soul that Ralf can feature in future newsletters. That's fantastic. All right. You have shared. Oh, and by the way, I want to mention in the book, also get the book, because in the appendix, or throughout the whole thing, you've got so many different elements. We have only scratched the surface. We've been talking about leadership. We've been talking about promotions and soul drivers. And as I mentioned, Ralf goes in depth on how you structure every different aspect of organization life and all the systems to support corporate soul. So there's a wealth of information for you. So many different questions to help you draw out the application and what you want to be doing there and take a look at how you're doing. And then in the appendix, there are even more great case studies and questions that you can ask yourself as you're building corporate soul. That said, so go to the website, get the book. Ralf, as we get ready to wrap up here, you know, you've shared several different examples with us from a number of different organizations. And I love, you know, Lego needing to really get the DNA of the people who love Lego. Let's get our Lego lovers in the building. Was there a specific example of soulful behavior or leadership that stood out for you? Maybe it surprised you, I know you've shared a number of them, the CEO writing the letter to the individual who'd lost somebody. Something that stood out for you or surprised you in addition to the ones that you have shared so far?
Yeah, I think there was one in particular. I mean, I wrote the book pretty much throughout 2020, right? And as we all remember, because we've all been accustomed to it now, this was the year of the COVID outbreak and hit various industries tough. It hit everybody, but it hit some industries harder than others, and hospitality was one. And we talked about Hilton a little bit. There was one thing that happened that year, which I think is going to become a organizational behavior masterpiece for universities and students to look into, which is the moment when Airbnb had to let go 25% of their workforce. And we've seen recent examples, like, I mean, shortly before Christmas, there was the Better.com disaster, also 25%, 800 people. LinkedIn, I think, was 1,600, so twice as big. And P&O Ferries in the UK, just like a week or two ago, same thing, Zoom call, 800 people. So Brian Chesky, Airbnb's CEO, had kept the communication line with his employees from the moment the pandemic was identified as a pandemic and the impact on hospitality very openly. And he had town halls, and he had as much as possible in Zooms and regular emails. And at one point in May 2020, he had to convey the message that 1,600 people will have to leave. And you can imagine everybody who's ever done that is a real challenge. And the way he did that, and the whole letter that he sent out is in the book, but also you can find it on Airbnb's website. What he did was amazing in two areas. One, he addressed both the ones that had to leave and the ones that were able to stay in the same letter. And if you think of a company as one ecosystem, that's a very important thing to do. Secondly, what he did was the company put together quite a program to support everybody who had to leave. But the letter is a masterpiece in terms of emotional intelligence and the way to actually share his deep feelings about the fact that 1,600 people who made Airbnb, Airbnb, had to leave. And he was motivating them, saying the qualities that you've brought into this place are qualities that are needed everywhere. So we will support you in getting a new job. And since when you look at Airbnb's purpose, which is all about a sense of belonging, you can belong anywhere. This is all following as a red thread on the line of the purpose from Airbnb. So it's strategically sound, it's emotionally superb, and it's one of these mass layoffs that you haven't heard in the news so much about compared to the Better.com or others.
So even in the really difficult, challenging things, to have alignment with your shared understanding, those values, in your communication, all of it, even in a mass layoff, you can still be acting in accordance with who you are. That is being the leader you'd want your boss to be. Ralph, thank you so much for being a guest on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
My pleasure, David. Great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Until next time.
Absolutely.
The UPS Store is making packing and shipping Easter gifts quicker than ever this year with UPS Air. How quick? Quicker than a walk around the park. Quicker than eating all the Easter candies. Quicker than finding a golden egg that you know is stuffed with cash. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back. Guaranteed at no extra cost. Exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send Easter joy on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.